Listen, there's a great work to be done. As soon as you win this court battle, you must deliver this message. Take advantage of this opportunity and declare a powerful message to this world. He expects more of us. He believes we can do more. Who's going to stop Christ? Who's going to stop Christ from getting this work done?
This is Behind the Work.
Welcome to Behind the Work. I'm Grant Turgeon. We're broadcasting to you live from the Herbert W. Armstrong College campus in Edmond, Oklahoma. I've actually abandoned my usual standing position in order to sit across from our special guest here in studio, but I'll leave you in suspense as to that right now as we go through some of the news of God's work. The call center has announced that we have three new in-home operators who have graduated the training program. That brings the total number of in-home operators to 112. That means that there are 112 people who are able to assist with taking calls for the Key of David television program and recording requests for literature from that program. The Foreign Language Translations Department is currently inserting the final edits for Spanish translations of the January 2019 Philadelphia Trumpet News Magazine, The Truth About Christmas booklet, Single-Minded for God booklet, and the Which Day is the Christian Sabbath booklet. Also, the department is uploading audio files of Live by Every Word programs in Spanish, French, and German, and the Spanish Bible hymnal and accompanying piano music. A lot of you will be excited to learn that copies of the new booklets, A Pivotal Sign of the End Time and How God Values Music, are now being packed to fulfill a backlog of pre-orders. A lot of people requested these booklets in response to recent Key of David television programs, and now we have the booklets in the warehouse ready to be sent out. And I got my copies the other day. They really do look nice and shiny. They're high quality. And just so you know, as far as I understand, these booklets are available only by request. So you have to request them. They will not automatically be mailed to you. The staff of the music department has updated the music resources page at pcog.org. The Undefeated, The Story of Isaiah and Hezekiah musical is now available at pcog.org in the music tab, or in the resources tab if you're signed in under the music section. And it's also available on various digital music services. Finally, today is the 50-year anniversary of Herbert W. Armstrong announcing that Ambassador College students would be participating in archaeological excavations. So we have now been participating as God's work in digging projects for 50 years. All right, I'll take you out of suspense now. We have a special guest here today. She's a home economics instructor at Armstrong College here. She is one of the original 12 members of the Philadelphia Church of God, and she's my own mother. Mrs. Laura Turgeon is here today. Welcome.
Hi, Grant.
That's pretty great to be able to interview you today. I never thought that this would happen on the radio like this. I was just talking on the phone a couple hours ago and joked that you could come on the radio with me, and to my shock, you agreed.
I know. I hope I don't regret it.
Well, the reason we're having you on today is actually, contrary to what some of the listeners might think, it's because, not because you're my mother, but because there are some events that took place this weekend that are very important. This Sabbath, we celebrated the 29th anniversary of the Philadelphia Church of God, which actually was on December 7th, but we celebrated it on December 8th. And because you teach that home economics class, you have a big part in preparing for that anniversary celebration, too. Please explain how you and your students contribute to this special event.
Well, every year in the fall, we begin preparations for it. And basically, it's we have a lot of help from various members in the congregation, as well as the HQ employees. Basically, what the home economics class does, it's my sophomore girls. We mainly every year, the girls will make desserts And also, they will serve that day after the Sabbath. They serve. We have two lines at both ends of the balcony, so they do all of the serving and all of the cleanup. And this year we had Mrs. Sharon Rouser did the main cake, and then Paris Turgeon, who's my assistant in home economics, she did all of the desserts, and then I did the flowers, and then we did the setup together. So it's definitely a group effort, and I can't thank all the people enough who help out with this endeavor.
And it was definitely a beautiful display. That was up in the balcony of Armstrong Auditorium this past Sabbath, and of course it coincided with celebrations in various church congregations around the world. It's a really special date for God's church, obviously. But not only do you help the rest of us celebrate the founding of the church, but like I said in the introduction, you are an original 12 church member. You were there when the church began on December 7th, 1989. Your brother, trumpet daily radio show host Stephen Fleury, has written that he will always remember where he was and what he was doing the day his father was fired from his position as a minister in the Worldwide Church of God. He was on the Ambassador College campus in Big Sandy, Texas, as a second-year student. He was attending the groundbreaking ceremony for a new Hall of Administration building, and from what I understand, they were even planning on moving church headquarters from California to Texas, which was the yes. purpose for that building. Pastor General Joseph Tkach attended the ceremony. Right after that, the college dean and assistant dean called Mr. Stephen Fleury into their office and informed him that his father, Mr. Gerald Fleury, had written a manuscript critical of church administration. That manuscript, finished soon thereafter, became Malachi's message. So, do you remember where you were and what you were doing that day like your brother does?
Yes, absolutely. It's hard to forget, actually. But I was in an apartment at the time when he and Mr. Amos had been called into Mr. Tkach Jr.'s office. And to give you a little bit of a backstory, I knew about Malachi's message from the previous feast. And I had just graduated from Ambassador College in May, and I was hired on at church administration, and I worked in Mr. Tkach Jr.'s office. So when I went back to work after the feast, knowing about Malachi's message, I knew that at some point that down the road it would come to a head, obviously, with my father. And so anyway, what happened was I was waiting in my apartment that I shared with two other girls to hear from my dad after he and Mr. Amos got done with their meeting with Mr. Tkach Jr. But that morning, what happened was my father called me at 6:30 a.m. and told me that, and this was very unusual for him to call me at 6:30 in the morning, but he said, we have a problem. They know about Malachi's message, and it's totally up to you, but if you would like to go into work, you know, it's your decision. Well, at that point, I knew I didn't want to go into work because I knew that I agreed with Malachi's message after proving it. And so I did not go into work, and that's why I was in the apartment. And I basically knew that my father was going to be fired. That was probably the most likely outcome. And so at 8:15 sharp, I got a call from Mr. Tkach Jr. Asking how I was, because he obviously was calling me having not come into work at 8 like I normally would, and proceeded to ask me if I knew about what my father had written, and I said yes, and so it was a rather unpleasant conversation, but I obviously lost my job too, but was also planning to quit. But anyway, that's basically where I was in that apartment waiting for my father to call, and then that was in the evening, later in the day. So I was in my apartment all day packing, getting ready to move back to Oklahoma for a major life change.
So this was the day of December 7th, 1989, yes. And your father and Mr. John Amos flew from Oklahoma to California that day
yes.
to get fired. And you pretty much knew ahead of time that was going to happen.
Yes.
And I think it's astounding that you were working for the very man who ended up firing your own father. I don't know if that fact gets brought up enough, but it is very interesting that that's the position you were in and you knew in advance. Do you have any stories of what it was like around the office with Mr. Tkach Jr.?
Well, when the changes started happening, after Mr. Armstrong died, I would pick up on things like they would have weekly meetings. And I always felt like there were subtle maybe put downs of Mr. Armstrong being said in a roundabout way. There things would be said, you know, like, oh, the church grew for 30% over a period of years. And, you know, that's there was never a plan. And it was just things like that that I would pick up on. But I was also young. I was only 22. And so I kind of would second guess myself a lot of times, like, is this what I'm hearing? Is this right? But thankfully, I had my father that I would talk to on a regular basis. And he would help me with the things that were going on as far as the changes in the church. So it was a good office environment. But when the changes started happening in the church, the thing that was kind of interesting is Mr. DeCaccia Jr. was obviously getting a lot of calls. He would leave his door open to his office, and he would get a lot of calls from members that were very concerned about the changes. And you knew that's what they were. You knew that's what the phone calls were about, because he would get very loud, obviously, because people didn't agree with the changes that were happening in the church. So the people in the office were lovely, and it was a real blessing to have the job for the short amount of time that I did. But you could definitely see that things were changing.
Wow, that's just incredible to have a firsthand account of what's going on at such a pivotal time in the work, really a transition between the sixth and seventh eras of God's church, and the church going off track like that, which really no one thought it would. Even Mr. Fleury didn't think that that's what was going to happen. He thought that if they had read his manuscript, they'd get back on track.
Right.
And then, of course, he started to get the sense as he was flying out there that they were pretty upset and maybe it wouldn't necessarily turn out that way.
Right. And I had the same feeling after Mr. DeCaccia Jr. called me that morning. I knew it wasn't going to go well, because it didn't go well for me.
Apparently, according to Mr. Fleury the other day, he was called by Mr. DeCaccia Jr. and asked if he could fly out to California that day. And Mr. Fleury said, oh, well, let me check my schedule. And Mr. DeCaccia said, well, you better get out here. So
yes.
At that point, he probably figured
there was no choice.
Something was very bad.
Yes.
Something horrible was probably going to happen.
Yes. And it's kind of interesting, because in the days prior to 9/11, you could use someone else's airline ticket. You can't do that today. But because of my dad and Mr. Amos flying out for that meeting that night, my dad had me use his ticket to fly back with Mr. Amos so he could drive my little pickup back home with all my belongings, because he didn't want me to drive cross country by myself.
So you took his ticket and he drove your truck back.
Yes.
And that's quite a famous story in church history, too, how he took 3 days to drive back and would sometimes even stop on the side of the road just trying to comprehend what had just happened in that meeting.
Right.
I mean, he'd given his whole life to God's work and serving the brethren, and currently he was a minister in Oklahoma in the Worldwide Church of God. Then all of a sudden he's fired, and there's no thought of really a church or having a huge following, or there's no money to do a work with at that time. So
right.
So for him, it must have been a huge test of his faith to have to go through all that. And he had a long time to think about it in that drive in that little yellow pickup
yes.
truck.
Yes, I can only imagine how hard it was. But it was, for all of us, it was earth-shattering in so many ways. I mean, it was, we knew God was doing something, but that's where the faith did come in.
Right, I'm sure. Well, right now we're talking with Mrs. Laura Turgeon. She's an original 12 PCG member, and you're listening to Behind the Work right now. And I'm Grant Turgeon, your host. Well, after the anniversary celebration of the founding of the PCG this past Sabbath, you hosted the extended families of the five original church members who are still attending services or still alive, of course, too. It struck me at that dinner that you and the other four founding members there, Mr. Gerald Fleury, Mrs. Melody Aldrich, formerly Thompson, Mr. Ethan Amos, and Mrs. Andrea Fraser, formerly Amos, are like walking history books. You had so many stories to share with all of us. You told us those stories of the early days of the PCG for many hours and how God worked miracles every step of the way. I'll just give you some examples of God's hand in those early days, as you all recounted the other night. Mr. Fleury's assistant, the late John Amos, had been stationed at WCG headquarters in Pasadena, California. He requested a transfer and was about to be sent to New York until a last-minute change redirected him to Oklahoma, where Mr. Fleury was serving. Mr. Amos was totally loyal and submissive to God's government. He read installations of Malachi's message as Mr. Fleury wrote it, but didn't tell on him for writing it. So that was a big part of it, the fact that he was able to have more time to work on it.
Right, because he was agreeing with, he was convicted by it.
Exactly. And I've even read, I believe he read Malachi's message either 12 or 14 times.
I think it was 14.
In about 3.5 years.
Yes.
So that just shows you how dedicated he was to following God wherever he happened to move the church. The night that both of them were fired, on December 7th, 1989, Joseph Takacs Jr. and Mike Fizell actually attempted to convince Mr. Amos to betray Mr. Fleury when Mr. Fleury was in the other room, but Mr. Amos refused to speak until Mr. Fleury returned. Again, just proving how loyal he was. And if you search for John Amos's name in a lot of the PCG literature, Mr. Fleury talks about just what a great assistant he was, how they were basically two nobodies within the church serving in Oklahoma. Nobodies being his words,
yes.
Not mine, of course. And even though they were basically on the same level, you could even say, Mr. Amos immediately knew God was working through Mr. Fleury, and he started taking his orders through Mr. Fleury. So it
right.
just showed God's government in action from the very start. There was never a clash to see who would take control.
No, Mr. Amos was so supportive of Dad from the get-go, and it was just an amazing thing that they had each other, really, to go through that really tough time.
Right. A couple other things just from that conversation at dinner the other night, some of the great stories that you all were telling. In the early days of the church, the Fleury, Amos, and Thompson families all lived within about a mile of each other, mm-hmm. which really helped in the coordination of typing, editing, printing, distributing Malachi's message. And then the late Tim Thompson was even an English major. And, of course, he was able to use his knowledge in that field to increase the quality of Malachi's message. Those stories obviously were incredible. What is your fondest memory from the early days of the church?
Well, there's probably a couple, but I would say I do remember the packing parties that we would have over at the Thompson house. We'd all get together and package Malachi's message and get them mailed out. And, of course, it was very, basic back then. We were all, you know, hand-doing everything, driving to the post office, delivering them to the post office, and then to be mailed out. Those were so much fun, and we really got close as a spiritual family, but we also almost felt, in some ways, it felt like a physical family because we were so small. And then also, like the first 2 weeks after Dad and Mr. Amos were fired, Dad had nightly Bible studies just going over Malachi's message with the little group. And I felt like that was so encouraging, and it really built our faith, made it stronger, and made us feel further convicted that we knew this, that God was doing something special. Those are just some really fond memories, but the time that we spent together, all of us working, doing the work, we were just all doing it together, the 12 of us. So it was lots of good memories.
And how soon after that did Mr. Stephen Fleury join up with that? Because he wasn't one of the original 12, but he was very soon after.
Yes, he was like, I think he's 13th, basically. He
right.
was in Big Sandy while all of this was going on, and he was making sure, he happened to work in the library there, but he had been listening to a lot of tapes of Mr. Armstrong. So he was just waiting for the right moment, I think, to leave college and head back to Oklahoma where we were. So it was just a short bit after that. I can't remember the exact time.
And do you remember how many of the original 12 were actually hired by the church at the time? Like, how many of you were spending your working days working for the church, and how many actually just had to volunteer on their own time to help out?
Well, initially, we all had to get jobs because mm-hmm. The history, the church started very small with $80. So we all had to find jobs. Mr. Amos and Dad were even prepared to find jobs. But then it began to take off.
So they're the only ones who didn't have to go get jobs.
Right. The rest basically. Of us, yeah, basically everyone else had their own income. Wow. They had outside work.
And like Mrs. Aldrich was saying at dinner the other night, they had a really good place at where they worked that helped them with some of the typing responsibilities.
Yes.
Too. And then even Mr. Stephen Fleury was working at a print shop, and that helped a lot too.
Right.
It just seemed like so many of the details came together perfectly to allow the work to get started. And then, of course, a lot of listeners will be familiar with the fact that the first copies of Malachi's message began arriving in mailboxes on January 16th,
yes,
the four-year anniversary to the exact day of when Herbert W. Armstrong died.
Right.
Just another astounding fact that you would have to think is more than a coincidence.
Absolutely. Yes. We weren't trying to plan it. It just happened to work out like that. But it is amazing how, when you look back, all the miracles God worked out.
And even just something that popped into my head now that wasn't even mentioned the other night, but the fact that Mr. Amos had a lot of ties to Ohio, and he had a huge list of contacts, right?
Yes.
Of people he knew up in Ohio who he could end up sending that book to as well.
Yes, absolutely. There, quite a few of us, we had addresses, and many, many people that started coming along would send in addresses from their various congregations, and so it would slowly spread.
Yeah, it's like a web. Like each person has,
yes,
10 or more, and then pretty quickly the number multiplies. You can send the book out to a lot of people, and even if it's a small percentage making an actual commitment, it does add up.
Absolutely.
Pretty quickly. And then you look around today and you see what the work has become. And it really is miraculous in every way that we've been here for 29 years. And physically, you would think that it might fall apart right away, but it definitely didn't.
No, it's just miraculous to think of where we are today. And it's just the many fruits to show where God is working when you see what we have today and that we started with basically nothing.
Exactly. By your fruits, you shall know them. That's what the Bible says, and it is definitely clear where the one true church is today. Well, this has really been great. I've been speaking with Mrs. Laura Turgeon, one of the original 12 members of the church, and you've been listening to Behind the Work. Our next episode will be next Monday at 11:30. Hopefully, we can keep on interviewing various of the original 12 members, so you can look forward to that. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Behind the Work. Email your thoughts to comments at kpcg.fm. Listen for a new episode each Monday at 11:30 a.m. Central Time.